joining us now, as he does every week, our MLB insider at ESPN. It's Buster Olney. How you doing, Buster?
I'm doing okay. What's going on with you?
Oh, I was waiting for your interpreter to answer. I'm sorry, Buster.
Man. Go right on to that one.
It was just a... Well, give me your thoughts on that. That's pretty deep out here. What did you think about what Jerry Revy had to say?
I cringed.
I don't quite get it.
It surprised me when I heard it, because it felt like that was a conversation that you might have heard 25 years ago. Oh. But, I mean, to be honest, I just interpreters are omnipresent around the clubhouse. You know, you got some players from Korea, you got some players from Japan. They now have interpreters from players, especially young players from Latin American countries where, you know, their first language is Spanish and they don't know English as well. And so I was surprised to hear Jerry say that. And the first thing I thought of was like, wait a second, what about all the Japanese players that the Red Sox have had through the years?
Right.
And they've had interpreters for those guys, from Daisuke Matsuzaka to Tozawa to...
Koji Uehara. You know,
yeah, exactly. I was just surprised.
Yeah, Buster, I'm with you, but I just that spurred me on to another question. When I worked in minor league baseball, I remember a lot of the Latin players getting English lessons. I'm curious, do they do that at the major league level, especially for these guys that come in more aged in, you know, like the Cuban players, the Japanese players, do they give English lessons to those guys?
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. And let's face it, at the major league level, you know, they're much more cognizant of that sort of thing than they were 20, 30 years ago, where I felt they were sort of tone deaf. And I'll give you some examples of that. For years, I thought that they kind of looked at players who spoke English as a second language, a third language, as just, well, that's the way it is, and you better dive into the deep end of the pool and try to figure it out. And so as a reporter covering the sport, if you wanted to talk to a Spanish-speaking player, you know, you would have to, well, we'll see if his teammate can interpret for him. We'll see if a coach can interpret for him. And let's face it, not all interpreters are created equal, right?
Right.
I think the closest they ever got to getting beaten up in a clubhouse was Jose Cardenal, who was the Yankees' first base coach, once interpreted for Orlando Hernandez El Duque, a story that I wrote in the New York Times. This is in El Duque's first year with the team. In the piece, I wrote that opposing hitters were making an adjustment to that sidearm delivery he had, and they were trying to hit the ball the other way. What Jose interpreted for him with a smile on his face was that the league had figured El Duque out. And so I'm standing in the clubhouse talking to Ricky Ledeay one day, and there's El Duque staring me down, and he looks at me and says in so many words, "You want to go? You want to fight?" Okay. So, those guys, I've always felt terrible for those players. As someone who got a D+ in my last Spanish class at Vanderbilt, it really isn't until recent years that Major League Baseball has now insisted on get an official translator for Spanish-speaking players. If you want to take English lessons like Gary Sanchez of the Yankees is doing now and work on your English, you can do that as well. And they give players a lot more help than they used to. And thank goodness for small reporters like me who might get beaten up otherwise.
Buster Olney, our MLB insider at ESPN, joining us here on the TikTok Jewelers Guest Line. By the way, my new nickname is Scooter. I want to be called Scooter, Buster. Can you believe that? You would think after a while, like, I'm not going to give this guy anything to hit. That's just crazy.
You know, I thought about it after it happened, that this is perhaps the most unlikely event in the history of baseball.
Wow.
And I will give you some statistical backing on that, because, you know, you guys have probably gone through some of this. There have been 23 perfect games in baseball history. There have been something like 300 no-hitters. There have been, about that many cycles. Well, just 17 guys have hit four homers in a game. And let's face it, Scooter Gennett is probably the least likely of all the guys who did it. The last guy who had fewer, the only guy who had fewer homers than Scooter Gennett before he had a four-homer game was a guy who played in the 1890s. And so I submit this is the most incredible event. I mean, we've seen, you know, a Don Larsen step up and throw a perfect game in the World Series. Hey, you know, they're more perfect games than there are four homer games, and that's why, you know, to see the big smile on Scooter's face after he got the fourth one was pretty cool.
Buster, we've been talking a lot about how a potential sweep in the NBA Finals is bad for the NBA. You've been around a handful of sweeps in the World Series. How bad is it for a sport? How detrimental?
I think a better way to look at it might be, if you forgive me, is how much better it is for the sport when the series goes seven games, right? Yeah, for example, we were in Detroit, we were driving the other day, and Aaron Boone was talking about, hey, remember that World Series in Detroit and how cold it was? And then we were like, man, that was a bad World Series. We could barely remember anything about the Giants and the Tigers from 2012 because it went so fast. And on the other hand, we remember everything, right, about the World Series last year between the Indians and the Cubs. We remember everything about maybe the greatest World Series ever played, certainly the greatest game ever played in baseball history, in Game 6 in 2011 between the Cardinals and the Rangers, the Yankees and the Diamondbacks in 2001. The sport, you know, whatever sport it is, so much better served by a Game 7, which is why I think everyone would love to see a Game 7 in the NBA Finals in the Stanley Cup.
You know, Buster, I was bringing this up yesterday about the Yankees and the Sox. It's just not doing it for me. I'm not getting hyped. There's no bad blood. I don't have an A-Rod. I don't have a Jeter. I don't have a Big Poppy. I don't even have the fans because they've priced the fans out of Yankee Stadium. I don't get the regular Yankee fan yelling obscenities. I get nothing out of this rivalry anymore, it seems like.
See, but what you need with that attitude is you need a personality like a Chris Sale who kind of, you know, he's a little tense, right?
Yeah.
And I was mentioning this to someone the other day. Aaron Judge is sincerely, truly a really nice person.
Oh, that's
Mookie
too bad.
Betts is a sincerely, right, he's a truly nice person. These two teams right now are filled with really good guys. Brett Gardner is a really good guy. You need to sort of have the X factor thrown in at this point. And I do think if you were a weather forecaster, you look off at the horizon right now with these two teams and say, you know what, conditions are building for the rivalry to come back, because we know from the days of Carlton Fisk and Thurman Munson, you know, as you mentioned, Veritek and Alex Rodriguez, when these two teams are chasing the same prize and they're both pretty good, that's when you can have things develop, and that's what could happen this summer. It's not there yet, I agree with you, but the conditions are ripe.
Buster Olney of ESPN joining us here on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Buster, Masahiro Tanaka has really struggled. He's got the second highest ERA of all qualified starters in baseball. Should the Yankees consider a kind of a forced DL trip for him or something?
Well, I checked on that today, and what I basically was told was he says he's healthy, okay? And I will tell you this, the Yankees are pretty conservative about their injury stuff, and if Tanaka says he's healthy, and this is potentially a year in which he could opt out of his contract, they can't say anything, and they're not going to force him on the DL. By contract, he's not allowed to be put in the minor leagues. So their choice is to either let him make his next start or to not, and you know, to either skip him or put him in the bullpen, let him try to work it out this way. I can tell you they're completely perplexed by this, you know, how bad he is, how flat his stuff is. I am wondering, because the one thing about Tanaka is a really a vicious competitor, and he really cares. And you do wonder, I'm sure the Yankees have too, you know, we know he has at least a partially torn elbow ligament. And since it looks like that he's not going to benefit from opting out of his contract, I do wonder if privately his representation, his agent Casey Close, might sit down with him, take him out to lunch and say, you know what, it's not working. You might as well go get the Tommy John surgery.
Ooh,
and let's get on the road to get you back. And to be honest, at this point, the Yankees probably privately wouldn't necessarily be as upset as they would have before.
Yeah.
Because he's not helping them on the mound. There's no doubt about that.
No, you're right about that. Hey, let me help you, Buster, because I know you're a fantasy football, baseball guy. So let me go for this kid. He's having a good year, this Craig Kimbrel kid. Wait till you check him out. He's unbelievable, Buster. What a year he's having. Is it just fantastic or what?
Yeah, I think it is. Out of his last, the numbers might be off, but I think I remember I posted him on Twitter today. Out of his last 54 hitters he's faced, he struck out 33 of 54 hitters with only like three hits and one walk.
Wow.
Okay, think about how great that is. And you know, I talked to a scout today who said that way that Craig Kimbrel pitched last night was the best reliever that he's seen, because you got a guy throwing a career high average fastball velocity, 98.1 miles per hour this season, pitching up in the strike zone and mixing that with just a vicious breaking ball low and away, and the Yankees had no chance. Now, you do wonder, I mean, three of his last four outings, he's coming to the game in the eighth inning. Do you want to go to that well this early in the season this many times? John Farrell, I think, acknowledged after the game yesterday that this is not something he's entirely comfortable with, and it probably speaks to the need for the Red Sox to develop, you know, seventh, eighth inning guy. And Carson Smith, who they traded for before 2016, through today, he's making progress, and I'm sure they'd love to have him back to help plug that hole.
You know what's so funny, Buster? I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I told you and Brady, I mean, this was like maybe 6 weeks ago, I go, why wouldn't you bring him in? There was a situation that happened with the Red Sox. They lost a game in the eighth. I'm like, why wouldn't you bring him into the eighth? They're like, oh, you just don't do that. I don't know. This may be like a changing of the tide. Why not bring the guy in the eighth if that's when it, you know, warrants? You know what I'm saying, Buster?
Well, the reason why, and Brady and I are well aware of this, okay? We're well aware that when you get to October, if the Red Sox blow a game because a tired Craig Kimbrell gives it up, you'd be killing him for that.
Yes,
for sure. Yes, it would be.
Okay. No, but in all seriousness, I do think that there's, and we saw this in the postseason last year, that managers are more willing to call on their relievers in high-leverage situations. But there is a concern about going to guys too much, especially early in the year, because you do have the late season fade out. I tell you this, around baseball, it's drawing the attention of folks with other organizations, and they're kind of going, I don't know if you want to do that too much. You don't want to tax your best reliever this early in the year.
Buster, I just can't envision a world where a youngster like Lance McCullers and Mike Fiers lead the Astros to 117 wins. But is this team, are they going to break the all-time wins record for the regular season?
I don't think so. And, you know, I covered the 98 Yankees who won 114. The Mariners, of course, in 2001 won 116. Who was it, the Cleveland Spiders? Like 116 and 36 or something like that. I don't think so. You know, I talked to A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager, this morning, and let's face it, as when you have a team with a lead that big, there will be situations. And we saw this with the Cubs last year, who got off to a very similar start. I think they were 40-16 at one point. But you know what? They used that advantage in the standings to rest some of their starters, to give guys days off, because there was no need to, you know, to put the foot to the gas the whole way through the year. You know, even the Yankee team, when I covered them in 98, the amazing thing was is that they put out such consistent effort, and then in September, they had some bad days, to the point that Joe Torre called a team meeting and chewed out the players and said, look, you guys better, you know, this is not a light switch. You can't turn it back on. And the Astros will go through that inevitably. The one thing to watch, though, and here's what could give them the best chance, the full expectation within the industry is that they will be a team that will trade for not only a high-end starter this summer, but they could also add a high-end reliever to that bullpen. Ooh. To better equip them for October.
Wow, well, the Astros look really good with that young offense. You know, another team that looks really good, how about my Mariners, 8 of 9? What do you think?
I think that if they win, every game for the next month and the Astros lose every game, then they'll pull within 20 games, right?
You know, Buster, I'm going to embarrass Brady just a little bit because I was telling a story about baseball and he looked at me like I was making it up.
Oh,
God. He never heard of the bullpen cart where they used to have the golf cart with the cap on top and drive the relievers into the game. He'd never heard of that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, is that you say that, and as if he should be ashamed. I think that you and I should be ashamed because we remember them. Because we're that old.
Were they not cool, though? Was that not awesome or what, Buster?
Well, actually, I remember, as time went on, I think what happened, I mean, the first time I saw it, I thought it was cool, and then after a while, I was like, wait a second, these are professional athletes. They need a 100-foot ride for the game. And you know this from the, you know, watching relievers in the 70s and 80s, yeah, like Terry Forrester or the Dodgers.
Yep, yep.
They looked like they wouldn't be able to make the walk from the bullpen to the mound because they were just a little too fat.
Who was the one that had the picnic and went and got some food, some ribs? I think it was like Charlie Kerfeld, I think it was.
Wait, who's the one?
Buster, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll catch up with you next week. Have a great
okay.
weekend.
Take
care.
Care,
Buster. Thanks, Buster.